This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. Black intellectuals, do they matter in an age where pop stars make policy and politicians are former movie stars? On today's special Labor Day Roundtable, NPR's Farai Chidea takes this question on with three black intellectuals. Algernon Austin, a sociologist and author of Getting It Wrong, How Black Intellectuals Are Failing Black America. John McWhorter, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and author of Winning the Race Beyond the Crisis in Black America. And Barbara Ransby, an associate professor of history and African American studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and author of Ella Baker and the Black Freedom Movement, A Radical Democratic Vision. Farai began by asking the group what it's like to be a black intellectual in today's pop culture-driven society.
So let me start out very much in the present day. You had people like Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, whatever he's going by, talking about voting or dying. You have Bill Cosby trying to reform the morals of black America. That's the present day. In the past, you had W.E.B. Du Bois talking about the future of black America. Are black intellectuals in a position now to be widely heard about the future of black America and America at large? John, why don't we start with you?
Yes, I think that actually it is a time when there's a definite ear across the nation turned to what black intellectuals or academics or what have you have to say, because race is an important issue and it has many manifestations. And so, yeah, I think the discourse these days is actually more dynamic than it was about 20 years ago, and it's a good thing.
Algernon, do you agree? Do you think it's a good time for black intellectuals?
I think it's a terrible time, because what I point out in my work is that most of the leading black public intellectuals are really spreading false negative stereotypes about blacks. They're claiming that there's more black poverty today than in the 1960s. They're claiming that blacks are doing worse educationally. They're claiming that there's more teenage pregnancy today than in the 1960s. So in my view, there's a serious crisis among black public intellectuals, because they're not doing the type of research that public intellectuals like Ida B. Wells Barnett and Du Bois did. They're really just spreading stereotypes.
I think
to a certain extent that's true, but we really have to go back to the question of definition, which is, you know, who are we talking about when we talk about black public intellectuals? We're such a celebrity-driven culture that we tend to think public intellectuals are the people that garner the most publicity for what they have to say, whereas I really think public intellectuals are those people who on a day-to-day basis are trying to speak with, speak to, speak about a truthful black experience. And that may or may not always have a media camera or microphone in front of that person, but it speaks to a certain immersion and engagement in black life, in black communities, etc. And so I'd like for us to expand the definition and also include women and feminists in that definition as well.
Barbara, why don't you throw out a couple names of people you think fit in the category?
Kim Crenshaw, Cheryl Harris, Kathy Cohen, Beth Ritchie, Farrah Jasmine Griffin at Columbia. Those are some of the people I think of, as well as Linda Burnham, who is not an academic, but runs a women's resource center out in California, in San Francisco. All those people are doing serious intellectual work on issues ranging from violence in the black community to AIDS to the persistence of institutional racism.
John, I want to get back to you. It sounds to me on some level that Algernon's book, Getting It Wrong, How Black Public Intellectuals Are Failing Black America, could be applied to a critique of your work. Do you feel personally that you fit into a category of people who are proclaiming a bit too much gloom and doom for the black community?
No, I don't think so. I think that the sorts of things that I'm saying are based on accurate engagement with quite a bit of data. And I think that if I didn't say the things that I'm saying, it would be not taking intellectual responsibility for talking about urgent race issues. So, for example, of course, you can say that black people today are not as poor as they were at time X. And in fact, if you actually engage with the book itself, it talks about some very real, painful, and urgent issues in the black community in terms of how the underclass has developed, particularly over the past 30 years. It's not alarmism, the facts about school, the facts about rates of illegitimacy in inner city black communities. I don't think those things can be denied, and I don't think that it would be a good idea if I or any other black thinking person or what have you went through a kind of an intellectual yoga where we pretended not to engage reality just in order to preserve certain sensibilities.
And we're talking about your last book, Winning the Race. You wrote Losing the Race and Winning the Race.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, Barb,
if I can jump, yeah,
yes,
if I
please,
can just
Barbara.
Jump in here. I think there may not be as much disagreement on this question as it initially sounds. That is, one can be a victim of injustice and oppression and lousy schools and poverty and all this, which I think many black people and white people in this country are at this moment. At the same time, people are not total victims. People are also resilient, creative. I mean, we equate being poor and suffering with a one-dimensional identity of victimhood, which has never.
And Barbara, you wrote a book on Ella Baker, who in some ways exemplifies going from poverty to self-awareness to activism. What lessons do you think that her life shed on this issue of black intellectualism? Because although she was a great thinker, I don't know that given how we classify intellectuals as being in the ivory tower, that she would be right. Classified as a black intellectual.
She did not have an academic appointment. She did not have a PhD. She was an educated woman, but she herself often said much of her education came through experience, activism, and the collective wisdom of the communities that she worked in. And I think there are those kinds of intellectuals today. The job, in part, of black public intellectuals is to take the discourse beyond the campus, to engage people in our communities who are also seriously researching, writing, thinking, debating issues of concern. Yeah, there are reservoirs of knowledge outside of the academy. We ought to embrace those as other ways of knowing the world.
Let's go back into the academy, though. Do you think that academics have an obligation to reach deep into the community, or do you think that it's okay to just stay there and write your books and not really reach out as long as you're helping people within the walls of the university? I guess, Algernon.
Yeah, I think there are different types of academics. Just as people specialize in different areas, there are different degrees to which people address sort of immediate sort of public questions. And it's vital that we have a diversity and real strong communication along those different lines, different levels. I think that there is a real breakdown because I think there's some excellent work being done sort of in the academy, and I agree with Barbara that there are real sort of grassroots scholars who are addressing very serious problems, you know, with AIDS, with crimes, with schools. But really, we have to acknowledge that there are certain intellectuals who command tremendous audiences. They write op-eds in the New York Times. They have tremendous reach, tremendous influence. And I think that those intellectuals are really disconnected from the other two. And those intellectuals, again, when you examine the facts that they're presenting about black America, there are serious errors.
Fry, I wanted to add something, which is that I think that there is definitely something to be said for working with actual people and getting one's message to the community, as well as writing the op-eds and writing long nonfiction books. I've been trying to do some work like that myself at the Manhattan Institute, working on prisoner reentry lately. But I do think that one responsibility that black public intellectuals have, and maybe in a way this relates to the point that Mr. Austin is making despite his problems with my career, is that I think that we do the community a disservice if our main interest is in teaching people that institutional racism exists and that nothing serious can happen in the black community until the playing field is entirely level. I think we can understand that the playing field isn't level, but I think we can also understand that waiting until it's even close to level, might be to condemn too many generations of people to not doing as well as they very certainly could, despite the fact that the world isn't perfect. And so I worry sometimes that there's a sense that the main notion of being a black intellectual or a black academic is to take the lapels of America and remind everybody once again that there is societal racism. We need to teach people how to do their best despite societal racism. racism.
I think we do that. I think we send that. We should send that message on an individual level, on a collective level. That is a survival strategy. But that actually is not mutually exclusive from also reminding people of the subtle and nuanced ways that racism still exists. You don't have to tell most black people that, first of all. But I think a larger audience is in real denial about the persistence of racism in this country. And so I think that is part of the obligation, to tell people to adapt and adjust and survive in an unjust situation. It doesn't make that situation just. It makes those people better able to survive in it. But I think there has to be at least a two-prong approach, which also continues to try to dismantle the injustice.
Well, Barbara, what you really bring up is that black public intellectuals don't just speak to African Americans. There is this bleed through to the larger American and even international community. And so to what extent do black public intellectuals really have an effect on black America? And to what extent does the work have an effect on the larger country? Is it perhaps easier for a black intellectual to get an op-ed in the Times and reach a certain white audience, predominantly white audience, than it is to really penetrate into working class communities, for example?
You know, the important thing that black public intellectuals do, and the thing that I'm trying to do in my work, is public intellectuals can either reinforce or challenge popular stereotypes. And I think when black students' SAT scores are up, National Assessment of Educational Progress scores are up, ACT scores are up, college enrollment rates are up, yet you have black public intellectuals saying that there's a culture of failure and black students aren't interested in education, you know, I see those statements as reinforcing negative stereotypes and ignoring the very concrete, solid evidence of educational progress among blacks.
John, I mean, do you agree at least with the factual assertions that Algernon is making, that there are some indicators that are positive?
Of course, those numbers are correct. But on the other hand, some very serious studies, as I have written about, show that there is a tendency among black teens to think of school as something that other people do. That doesn't mean that there's a culture of failure. But the issue of acting white among black peers is real. It's been proven. And I don't think that I can not talk about it out of a sense that I want to challenge stereotypes. Frankly, challenging stereotypes just in itself is not what I think of as an intellectual activity, if we're talking about the intellectual. Intellectual activity is about curiosity and being open to many kinds of findings. Challenging stereotypes is a rather mechanical activity of advocacy. If one is to be a black intellectual or an intellectual of any kind, that can't be your main goal because it doesn't really require thinking very hard and often doesn't tell people anything they didn't know already.
Barbara, do you think...
I have to jump in here. Yeah. I mean, you know, of course one can be an intellectual and an advocate. And once you've spent a good chunk of your life analyzing and assessing and articulating a problem or an experience, if you don't have something to say about it, something to advocate, something to put forward, a place that you come down in the debate, then I think that you might want to question the value of all that time invested. But I think the real oxymoron is this notion of intellectual conservatives or conservative intellectuals. I mean, to me, that's more of a contradiction than the idea of intellectuals as advocates, because, of course, conservatives preserve the status quo. And I think what intellectuals do by design, and intellectuals who do their work well do, is constantly interrogate and pick apart and question and challenge the status quo. That's how we come to new understanding, and that's how we create new knowledge. But I also want to just address really quickly this question of, are we reinforcing negative stereotypes and so forth? And back to John McWhorter's point about black teens. All teens, I think, in this culture have a certain anti-intellectualism. One is being a nerd if one is too studious. And I think that when we shine a light on certain mannerisms or certain behaviors or certain statements simply among black teens and don't look at the larger phenomena among many teens, I think we really give a very skewed view of what's happening in this country. I mean, we are a country that wants quick fixes and simple answers to complex problems. And unfortunately, saying that black kids want to, you know, put down intellectual work as acting white, I think that's a, a very simple and cliche response to a very complex problem, and I think it does do a disservice.
Well, we're almost out of time. Let me just wrap it up with one last question that may hopefully accomplish some of what you wanted to talk about already. We started out with a question about where Black intellectuals fit in a world that's crowded with people proclaiming from the pulpit of pop culture. I want to bring it back to that because, Barbara, you were just talking about teens, and teens, of course, take a lot of their cues from pop culture. They're going to look at Russell Simmons. They're going to look at P. Diddy. They're going to look at 50 Cent. And then older people are going to look at Bill Cosby. You know, he is a learned man, but he is not a typical public intellectual, yet he has taken the pulpit. What is it that academics or traditional Black intellectuals have to offer that these other people who are taking on some of the roles do not? I'm going to start with you, Algernon.
There are lots of specialists within the academy that are doing great work, but unfortunately I feel that we need several different types of intellectuals, and they need to engage with each other. I would love to see more interactions across the various different types of intellectuals there are.
John?
I think that that's very much true. I think the main point, whether we're dealing with public intellectuals or people in pop culture or the synergy between them, is just to understand that our explorations of these issues and looking for solutions can't be evaluated on the basis of how we feel about them. And that's why that word stereotype worries me, because we're not investigating our feelings. We're not trying to be fair to one another in terms of what words we use and what possible implications there might be. We're trying to uncover facts, and we're trying to figure out how we can change inconvenient realities. And the fact is that in the pop cultural realm, there's a great power, because people are going to hear a Bill Cosby, no matter how, you know, approximate some of his statements are, more than they're ever going to hear even, say, a Cornel West. And so there's room for both kinds of people, I think.
Barbara?
Yeah, I think that we really ought to strive not simply for publicity, but also to serve a greater common good, to tell the truths about Black people and Black communities as we understand them, and understand that that's going to represent a plethora of ideas. It's not a monolithic group. And we, you know, when John says we should just tell the facts, I mean, the facts are always contested. And so being able to disagree in public and to criticize the misogyny in Puff Daddy's comments and to criticize the class arrogance of a Bill Cosby is also part of the mix. So I think creating a democratic forum in which Black people can talk about ideas, engage one another across all kinds of divides, and also engage the larger world, because we don't live isolated and in a vacuum, and more than ever, the world affects Black people in this country as never before. So I think that's a part of the mix, too, the international component.
Barbara Ransby, John McWhorter, and Algernon Austin, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was NPR's Farai Chidea with a special edition of our Daily Roundtable.